Welcome to Relevant Parties by Carhartt Work in Progress. I'm Chelle Ravens, and in this series, I'm going behind the scenes at some of the world's best independent record labels to meet the visionaries and the obsessives who've made musical history. In each episode, we sit down with one of these label founders to find out what makes them tick. We hear the tall tales and big ideas behind some of the most influential records and scenes of the past 30 years, and maybe try to work out just what possessed them to take on one of the most challenging jobs in the music industry. So far on Relevant Parties, we've met some of the biggest fish in the small pond of independent record labels. But I'm especially excited to talk to Marvin and Valentino from Public Possession, because this label feels to me like a quintessential indie record label of the 21st century. Public Possession was founded in 2013 in Munich, the city where Marvin and Valentino were both born and raised. And all the action is centered around the Public Possession record store and the local clubs where they've had DJ residencies, and more recently, Munich's Radio 80K radio station too. They design their own flyers, they have a really nice line of merchandise. Sometimes they've even been known to run a catering service. But everything is built on a small and kind of friendly scale. And somehow the music actually reflects all this too. The artists on the roster have created this kind of compact community of friends and pen pals around the world, and they've ended up finding what seems like a common sound. They don't all sound the same, but there's this shared, kind of quirky, laid-back, really good-humoured take on dance music. You've got fuzzy house jams by Andras, new wave pop by Mosaica, and dreamy Madonna covers by one guy who's a personal favourite for mine, Bell Towers. And this summer, Public Possession released Chill Pill 2, a compilation, which they say was designed to do nothing less than improve your physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Which is a pretty bold claim, certainly. But it's these kind of inbuilt values and the way that that's actually expressed in the music and how the label operates that makes Public Possession a really solid example of what a great independent record label can be these days. Especially now that physical records and even live performances are increasingly either less relevant or, you know, not even possible right now. So I wanted to ask them about the roots of this small and idiosyncratic label, but also to find out their thoughts and fears for the future, with dance music in disarray and big questions hanging over the future of the scene. Hello, Marvin and Valentino.
Hey. Hi, thanks for having us.
So coronavirus, of course, is still keeping us apart, sadly, but you two are in the same room together. Which is kind of a new experience, seeing people on screen together. Tell us where you are today.
In our studio in Munich.
And what's your studio like? Do you describe it a bit?
It's close to the river Isar. We're kind of in the center of Munich.
Yeah, it's actually in a backyard of a living, like it's a living area, and there's like this kind of backyard where an industrial designer has a huge studio, and he kind of sublets a few smaller spaces to mainly creative people. So there's like an architect and a few photographers. It's actually a pretty nice community.
And are you allowed to make noise in there?
Well, yeah,
we can, it can get noisy. But obviously we try to be thoughtful and respect our neighbours.
Oh, that's very kind of you. So some of the other independent labels we've got on Relevant Parties are pretty big in some ways. Some of them have a lot of employees, really big distribution networks. Some of them have sub-labels. Some of them have had crossover records that have shifted a lot of units, made it into the charts. But Public Possession isn't really that kind of label. You definitely have really big ambitions, but it seems to me that those ambitions are being enacted on a more compact scale, a more kind of homegrown scale. Is that how you always intended the label to be?
Yes. I mean, when we started, we didn't have any business plan for what's going to happen, but it was always clear that we want to have a channel for all our interests, and that most of the stuff is happening at the same time.
I think perhaps what makes us, or I don't know if it makes us different from other labels, but it's just our personal approach is that we kind of never really thought of public possession just as a record label. Obviously, we have the shop since day one, which gives us sort of like a physical base where we can meet potential interested people. And we, like, for the first 5 years, we only operated from there. So we didn't even have a studio or an office space. We did like all the work from the shop. So it was kind of like in between interacting with the customers, we kind of set up the next releases and stuff like that. By now it kind of grew a bit, like the label grew bigger and it's more of I'd say logistic work and emails and stuff. So eventually we had to kind of reconsider our approach, and we moved into the studio and now have very great people helping us at the shop, so that everything still kind of functions. And to come back to what Valentino said, I think it's important for us that public possession is not just a record label, it's also a place where we can conduct various other endeavors that might just be on our minds, and that can obviously be a lot of things. Like, we did books and we do a bit of merchandise by now. That's kind of like a part of public possession that's growing since 1 or 2 years. I mean, we try to kind of be pretty open when it comes to what we can do with public possession.
It's interesting to think that the physical space arrived at the same time as the record label. I think it's quite important for subcultures or for music communities to actually have a physical space. That seems to be a way of ensuring that a scene can sustain itself over time. I was listening to another podcast recently, the New Models podcast, and Matt Dryhurst was talking about this idea, this idea that if you own the building, you can control the space and control the future of your own musical community, in a sense. So I guess that is what the shop does for you, in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, we don't own the building where the shop is. That would be some weight lifted from our shoulders. But still, yeah, it was not really intentionally. I mean, we kind of like really threw ourselves into cold or hot water. I don't know, how do you say, when we started all this. But it pretty soon became apparent that that the shop is opening a lot of doors for us, because we met so many interesting people within the scene here in Munich that we didn't have access to before. And obviously it gave us the chance to invite DJs and artists from around the globe that were in Munich for playing gigs at clubs. So we had these in-store sessions that right now don't take place, obviously, but that have been taking place over the course of the last 7 years, almost weekly, where we kind of just give the space to somebody to play music at the shop, and people can come and listen and talk to each other. And that's been an integral part of public possession, and still is, hopefully will be again soon, once the corona problems kind of hopefully just vanish. So yeah, it's been very, very important for us to have this physical space. And also, I think we didn't really, we underestimated it at the beginning, that how important it is for other people when they perceive the record label, that they have a physical space that they can kind of connect to it. So I think it gave us as a label maybe an advantage over other record labels that do an equally great job with selecting music and putting out records, but who don't have this kind of physical space to go along with.
Tell me a bit about being in Munich as well. So I'm afraid I haven't been to Munich, but what I do know about it is it's, I believe, the third biggest city in Germany, right? You're shaking your heads as though you don't actually know.
No, we don't. I'm not 100% sure, but I just believe you're correct.
I looked it up in advance, and apparently it goes Berlin, Hamburg, Munich.
Yeah, it's quite possible.
Okay. But it's not a massive city. And obviously, from a kind of nightlife perspective or music perspective, it's certainly not a particularly famous music city. And it's not famous for nightlife in the way that Berlin is. But there are loads of great labels, great artists from Munich. So I wonder, could you tell me a bit about what the city is like as a music city? And I guess if you feel like there are any benefits to being in a slightly smaller, more compact city.
Well, we grew up here and we were born here. So now we have our families here. And for us, it never really was a question where we want to do our stuff. It's for us, it's more the question who you do the stuff with and not where you do the stuff. But especially for Munich, it's you have to be rather focused maybe on what you do. And because Munich is very expensive, so it doesn't necessarily give you a lot of room for experiments. But on the other hand, there are a lot of people doing amazing creative and whatsoever work here. So we have a constant exchange with interesting people around us. But you're right, it's not when you speak of Berlin and nightlife, we don't have a similar party tourism like Berlin or London. But still, here are a lot of great clubs too. I think we have maybe the highest rate of clubs in Germany. But I mean, let's say 90% of them are not in our... they don't offer maybe the music we...
very diplomatic.
I think probably like in any other city, but for us, obviously, as we experienced it from, as Valentino said, we come from Munich. From the beginning on, Munich is like has a very good foundation for what we do, and it always brought up great music labels like Goma or international DJ Gigolo Records or
Compost
and Permanent Vacation. And I don't know, I mean, I could go on until the 80s where like Moroder produced Donna Summer here in Munich and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it has like a legacy to kind of follow up to. And at least for us, we were lucky in at some stages of our developments. Like we had like pretty easy access to nightlife and to clubs. Like we got a residency as DJs very early on, where we played like once a week at one of the, at least in our opinion, nicest clubs back then. I mean, we had like a lot of open doors we just had to go through, and a lot of people who kind of like showed us the direction that would be possible with doing something like a record label. For that, we are very appreciative. And I think currently the scene is probably better than ever with a big club like Blitz who opened like 2 years ago, that kind of like probably for the first time in a while has introduced like a larger club to the city, which has been almost gone before. And then we have our residency at Charlie, which is like still like the ideal club because they really put focus on the local scene. Like they really try to create something from what's there rather than constantly seeking for input from outside. Which is, I think, a good approach when you want to build a scene
community
and a community. So yeah, we've been really lucky to have like a lot of people around us constantly that kind of kept pushing us into the right directions.
When you first started DJing together then, and you had a residency, what was the kind of music that you were bonding over? Did you have a taste that fit together really easily, or was it a kind of challenging B2B situation where you're always having to work out where to go next?
So it's rather option two, you. when we started, he was mostly into hip hop and maybe reggae, and
yeah,
and I was more into maybe electronical house or even techno sometimes. So we try to merge those genres without skills in the beginning,
which didn't sound very good. But it wasn't really, it didn't really matter, because it was like the first times we DJed was at a small bar in like summer and
Tuesday.
So it was like, no, we were our own audience. So that was a good
having kind of a lot stuff. Of cologne on being super nervous.
It was a good starting point for checking out where it should go. But I mean, that said, after maybe a year of experimenting, we kind of found a sound we could agree on, which was disco back then.
But then again, it...
And then we kind of started, had that as a starting point, and then we kind of like constantly our interests shifted from one thing to the other, and so there were points also much later where I think they were quite far off each other. So we had again problems to DJ together and frustrating situations, but we kind of managed to keep the bond. And it's, I think, one of the big plus to have somebody to DJ with, or also to have somebody you run a label with that closely as we do it. Like, I think there's like nothing that is not discussed before we do it, like between the two of us, which can be extremely exhausting, but it's also like a good kind of, it puts stuff into perspective, and you question things more, and you get obviously input that you can't give to yourself. So it's even better now that we kind of our team grows, and like there's times where we are at the studio where there's like five people working here, obviously not full time, but yeah, it's been very good to get fresh heads and ears and thoughts. Yeah,
it's super important for us.
Like, in that sense, I think we need input constantly. Like, it's we search for it ourselves, but it's also nice to have it presented to you by someone else sometimes. And that's what we always tried from the beginning on to do with each other. And now we have other people, or we always had other people who obviously helped us along the way.
But there were times when we DJed together when you try to embarrass the other one. And you play a really bad record, and then you go to the toilet. Maybe he's up there alone, and
yeah, it's a. I mean, we obviously there need to be some challenges every now and then.
Yeah, or you play a really hard to mix record, and then you see how he does, how he solves the problem.
And the first release on the label was also a collaboration of yours under the name Tambien. So I also wondered how you work together as musicians. Is there an obvious division of labor when you work on music together? How do you even agree on what direction you're going in? Because it sounds like you have many divergent ideas.
I think, like, I mean, first of all, Tambien is not just the two of us. It's like a third guy. It's Beni Brachtel. When he produces electronic music, he goes under Bartolo and does music for ESP Institute, for example, which is a great label from Los Angeles. And that's also where the second and the third Tambien record came out, or maybe the third and fourth. And even though he has like a background as a musician, so he knows how to play the violin and stuff like that, I wouldn't say we are like musicians at all, and we are probably not even
close to being
what you would call a producer. So we've been lucky to have Beni, who is like the exact opposite. Like, he's a very well-studied musician and a production genius. So I think in the beginning, it was just another way of playing around with ideas and another way of expressing what we wanted to express, and was very open. And we started with doing edits that were actually only for us playing at a club, and then we did like one record, or like we did three edits that kind of were nice and we got good feedback. So we did like a small pressing on vinyl that was before Public Possession, and it was really well received. And from that point on, I think the idea of maybe trying to do a label grew in our heads. And so I would say, like, maybe the production of music was more of a starting point than something that is still very relevant to what we do, because we know by now that there's other people who can produce music a lot better than we do. So we try most of the times to leave it to the artists we work with, and only very rarely still make it to the studio, I'd say.
Yeah, it's part of the process we're in, that we try to separate what's important and what's not. And being a musician, we realized that's maybe not something we should focus.
Yeah, I feel the same way as a music journalist, which usually means a failed musician. It's just fine to accept that there are other things that you do better and the musicians can just be great around you.
Yeah.
Another one of the early releases that I really like, I really love the first Tambien as well. I actually think it's very good. But yeah. Another one of the early ones is Bell Towers. And Bell Towers is an artist who you've had on the label many times now, several times. Tell me about Bell Towers. Who is Bell Towers and why did you want to release their music?
You should probably start because you were the one who met him first. And
I met him in Australia in 2010 or 11, I think, when I was traveling. I was just traveling and we had mutual friends, and then Andrew and Misha Hollenbach from Parks and Mini introduced him to me, and we are in contact since then. And then when we told him about our plans with the label, it was pretty clear that he's one of the artists we want to approach first for music. And I think his release is the third.
He has this third record that came out on Public Possessions by him. And I hadn't met him back then. He soon after came to Berlin to play a party with us that really sucked. We organized it. It was the first label party ever. And it was like a complete disaster from beginning to the end.
Why?
Several reasons.
Well, I think it was mainly not our fault, I would say. miscommunication with the venue the party was taking place at. But anyways, we still enjoyed ourselves, and a friendship kind of grew pretty quickly out of it. And then he moved to London and now lives in Berlin. And I'd say, like, when we like bringing us back to that, the thing that we need input, you can't do everything by yourself, and not everything is going to be created out of yourself. He's definitely been like one of the key, not only the key artists in terms of like the quantity of releases we have put out, but also in terms of forming our tastes over the years and introducing us to people that are now as well like important artists on the label. Like, I think Samo DJ, for example, who has like quite a few records out on our label. He was originally introduced to us through Bell Towers.
And Nice Girl.
Nice Girl, who just this year released her first record, and her second record is coming out now, and there's
tomorrow.
There's like a lot more stuff to be coming soon. She was introduced through him, so it's been great working with him. And he had his album out this year, which was like our first album on the label. Yeah, so it's a nice collaboration with him.
He's a shareholder of the company.
Yeah, kind of. If they're, yeah.
There's a certain atmosphere to a record like Light Rail that I think carries throughout the label in different ways. There's a kind of maybe a certain gentleness to it, a kind of maybe cosmic flavor sometimes, sometimes a slightly trippy kind of vibe. And I do think a lot of the records really have an element of humor as well. I don't know if any of that rings true for you, but I was trying to describe the label to someone the other day and I found it quite difficult to pinpoint any particular genre. How do you kind of imagine it in those terms?
I think everything you said is true, but also not, because I suppose it's very subjective kind of how you perceive music. But if we have to say, like, if we had to portray our approach to running the label and how to select music, it's very often the case that we kind of tend to go maybe for the tracks that are a little bit more odd. And especially the thing about humor that you said is very much on point, because music, or maybe art in general, like, takes itself too serious. It's maybe not so interesting to us anymore. It can still be very aesthetically appealing or deep or whatever you want to call it, but it's not maybe what we want to do with Public Possession.
And, but we take our work very serious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that we are not taking our work serious, but I'm saying that when we kind of decide what to put out or what to do, it's always important to us that you can, at least if you want to do, find an angle of humor in it, because it's not just, maybe it's also, maybe put it differently, it's not just there to function. It's also there to kind of like leave room
for other perspectives.
For other perspectives or interpretations. And like more often than not, we get like music sent to that we really like and that we know would probably sell very good, but has something missing and we decide against it. So it's maybe that's not economically not the ideal approach to do a business, but so far it has served well to us.
And the label that it reminds me most of, who I guess must have started around the same time as you, is Studio Barnhus from Sweden, because I feel that there is a similar character somehow, and also often very difficult to describe the music other than being, yeah, a kind of, like you say, just an oddball flavor and humorous a lot of the time.
Yeah, we are big fans of Studio Barnhus.
Yeah, it's definitely nice to be compared to them.
And you've had Baba Stilts on the label too, right? So there's a small crossover, at least one.
We are still in regular contact. I think he has like some big stuff planned for the future. I don't know if I can talk about it, but he's been also one of the people who definitely has influenced us with what he does and how he approaches things when it comes to music. Yeah, we are very glad to have been able to work with him in the past, and we will definitely be working with him in the future.
We are already.
Yeah.
So when you opened the store in 2013, thinking back, that was probably quite a good time to open a record store, because that was when we were all sort of in this moment of vinyl is back and everybody's buying vinyl again. And, you know, everybody kind of wanted record shops to be back, I think. It was Record Store Day was happening and all of these things. I wonder if any of that has changed at all, and if you feel that any of your business is changing as people perhaps use Bandcamp more, or do you think there's still a healthy market for people coming into a record shop to buy what you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's ups and downs, obviously, but that's the case since the beginning. I mean, we have four people helping us at the shop now, and if you talk to them, they it's basically constant for us. I mean, we change the way we buy third label releases, not our own, but when we buy from distributions, etc. That definitely has changed since the beginning. So we try to avoid building a huge stock and rather buy small batches more frequently to quickly sell them again. But in general, I think it's...
Yeah, it's pretty consistent. Yeah. I'd say, at least that's my feeling, that it's even more consistent locally, because there you have the aspect of going to a record shop, and I think people just like doing that. And it's very constant in that sense, even though like the people who come have changed over the course of the last years. Like, it's not like, I mean, we have some customers that have been there since day one, but there's also a lot of fluctuation, kind of people moving, or
it's like nightlife generations
kind of change. But that's been like a constant. I think online, I'd say, you could say that there is, with the arrival of platforms like Bandcamp, which is a fantastic platform, and I absolutely love it, and it's great for our label. But I think the competition online is very hard. Also with other like big online platforms that sell records in large quantities, it's not always easy to compete with them. But there is like, that's where what Valentino said comes in again. We always kind of try to kind of select very carefully what we offer, and it's always been key for us to kind of support and be supported by small labels that ideally people discover through our shop. And that's always been working for us. And that's also why it's so important to have like other people helping us at the shop now, because they maybe have a little bit more time to kind of dig deep into what's new and interesting. And
they all have different tastes.
And it really makes up the shop what it is, that we have like many influences and constant new input when it comes to what we offer. And I think that's the only way how a small record shop like we can survive. I think if you try to go for offering what everyone else offers and offering like a really broad selection, then it's gonna be very difficult really soon for a shop like us.
Yeah, and we made a lot of mistakes in the beginning.
Yeah,
too.
And we noticed that ourselves at the beginning, that we were like really ambitious and we kind of like made huge orders and had like a lot of backstock and just pretty soon noticed that it's not the way it's got to be done, and we had to really kind of reevaluate what we want to do. And since then, it's been always going good, and we're still there. So that's good for a record shop, I'd say.
Yeah, I think even just still existing is pretty impressive. What else does the store have in it other than records? I assume there are some other things.
The merchandise is becoming a big factor for us. And again, like we kind of tried to do it properly. Like when we did our first t-shirt, we kind of, it was very well received. And we soon noticed that if we want to do it, we do it properly. So we want to have like the fit has to be perfect, and the material. And
our own product.
And it has to be our own product. So we have like... we get everything produced for us now in Portugal, and it's been very, very helpful actually to support the vinyl sales. So that's kind of been a big issue for the shop. And then we always try to offer some print, which is maybe even more difficult than selling vinyl, selling books and magazines. It's kind of like what we are into, so we at least try to have a small selection.
There is not much space for displaying the products properly, so we have to select very carefully everything.
So yeah, it's just 20 square meters, so it's a very small shop. And I mean, I'd actually would like to do more in there or to offer more products, but it's also like an issue of time and again maybe trying to focus on the things that are that people visit the shop for.
You published a book of all of your flyers a while ago, which I kind of got the impression that there might be another book of one of those one day, but I wasn't quite sure if the flyers were designed by you two or if they were other people who had designed them and you'd collected them. Are they your designs?
It's all us.
Really?
100%.
Is that something that you both have previous training in?
No.
Well,
I mean, as Marvin said, we had this residency at the club in the very beginning.
Yeah.
That was maybe 12 years ago or 11. And we pretty soon started designing our own flyers for that night a week.
We kind of grew into it. And he studied at the Art Academy.
Okay. There we go.
Had internships with the graphic designers and stuff like
but
that.
But I was only allowed to do the raw
tasks.
All right.
I was not allowed to do detailed.
I
think you can see it in our work that it's often very, very quickly. And
we had like, I think since a year ago we had our first intern here, and he was like, he came in mainly as a graphic designer. He's called John.
And he changed everything.
And he's still here now. He actually, I mean, in the end, he kind of taught us things rather than the opposite way around. So that's been very helpful. But it's a kind of a do-it-yourself approach, I'd say. But the book was something we really enjoyed doing, and we plan on doing more stuff like that. I mean, we did another book on sleep, on the topic of sleep. It's like a small pocket-sized book, which is like a call-and-response approach where we exchanged like graphic and text material and collaged it together.
Why would you choose the topic of sleep?
Well,
I don't know, maybe it was at a time where we traveled a lot and were lacking sleep, and Valentino had, I think maybe at that time, the second child already, or?
Yeah, it was.
So yeah, sleep was definitely a topic which was like a constant issue in our lives. So, and then in the end, it was just we like, as I said, like the basis for the book was like this call and response idea, where we kind of like select materials and send them to each other or pass them to each other, and then the other one reacts with something else. And we kind of felt that it would be nice to do something, or to do it on a topic that we weren't really preoccupied with, other than being sleeping organisms at some points. So it was like, it would have been boring to do it about music or something like that, because then we would have it would have been clear what material we chose. So we make sure to send you the books.
Yeah.
Thanks. I think DJs are actually experts on sleep, so I think you've chosen a specialist topic there, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's something for everybody.
And it helps, like you read two pages and you fall asleep.
Okay, we're going to do some quick fire questions. Here's the first one. Would you rather be out late or up early?
Yeah, safe, up early.
I agree.
Retired DJs.
Already.
Only play after hours nowadays.
Yeah, so you can just get up early and go straight there. Okay, would you rather be in the city or the country?
City.
Both.
If public possession was an item on a menu, what would it be?
Pasta.
Plain?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, to choose a pasta sauce is difficult.
It's a challenge.
Maybe a Napoli, just a plain tomato sauce.
I would go for red wine.
They go together. That's perfect. What was the last book that either of you read?
I'm reading a really, really nice criminal story by Colin Dexter. And the detective is called Inspector Morse. And it's taking place in Oxford. And I can highly recommend it. He's basically, he spends more time in the pub than in his, inspection?
On his mission. Yeah, I think we both read many things at the same time. I read again at the moment.
Calvin and Hobbes. Comics.
The medium is the message.
Good choice. Do you read a lot of kind of theoretical things alongside fiction?
One has to be the sophisticated and the other one is...
Exactly. Someone's reading Inspector Morse and someone's reading some 60s philosophy. Great. Okay, and obviously the final question then has to be, what was the last record that either of you bought?
I bought a Chopin Nocturnes by Maurizio Pollini.
Also, I feel like Inspector Morse would enjoy that. He likes classical music, right?
I'm pretty sure he would enjoy it.
I'd have to inspect my Discogs, actually. I don't know. It was a house record produced by Glenn Underground. I don't know the exact title, but it's very nice. And obviously, like, a lot of stuff gets just picked up at the shop every now and then. Like, when there's new music coming in, we inspect and take what we need.
Okay, good. Now, on top of all of this, you have either run in the past or still offer a catering service, but I'm not entirely sure how serious this is. You have done it, right? You have operated a catering service.
Officially, you can. We have.
There's proof of it.
But does it still happen?
Occasionally, yes. I think.
Are you qualified for this? Are you both chefs?
No, he's more the chef. I'm more done for the raw stuff.
I did work in a kitchen a couple of months, yes, and but I wouldn't call myself a chef, not at all. But I think it kind of evolved out of a joke that we kind of said that providing some beverages at the shop is kind of the catering of public possession. And then some people kind of actually...
we set up a homepage for it.
Yeah, and some people actually, like, then at one point, like, somebody called us on it, and we thought about it a minute. Can we pull it off? And then we did. And it was like a shop opening of a brand. We DJed there, and we cooked in advance the food, and it was served by friends of us, and it was actually a really nice happening. And we did it one or two other times after that, but it's not necessarily like a main focus on our daily business. But we are here, like, whoever wants to be whoever wants us to cook for them, we are happy to discuss.
Did you see that we just relaunched the catering website?
No. Well, I've seen it, but I didn't know that it was the new one then.
Yeah, it's like, you should have a look.
Consider this an advertisement. Anyone who listens should go and check out.
Catering website is not bad, actually. Like, if you're seeking leisure time advice, it's definitely a place to visit.
What kind of thing did you cook?
Back then, it was actually sandwiches with, like, one was with cheese and a homemade chutney, and the other one was like with a Fleischpflanzel, which is like the equivalent of a burger, but a Bavarian burger kind of thing. I'd say, yeah, it was nice. I don't want to compare burgers to Fleischpflanzel, not. But I think everyone gets the idea.
Tell me a little bit about how your own taste and maybe how Munich's music scene has changed since you started Public Possession. Has the city changed very much, and has your own kind of idea of the music that you're into changed a lot?
Well, for us personally, I think it's still, the interests are still the same, like when you talk about how broad they are. But for the city itself, I don't know.
I think through the introduction of Blitz,
it has definitely
there was a shift towards techno.
It's like, always related to the like, places.
Yeah, I think so too. I think you can, like, there's like a place for every kind of musical genre within Munich, that you just have to know where to go. But I'd say, like, this feels very far away now, because it's like there's like no nightlife at all, like, since a month now, and it doesn't really feel like present anymore. But when there was still stuff going on, it felt like techno was becoming bigger in Munich. And I think if you want to talk about the scene and how it has changed in Munich, I think one very important factor is the radio ATK, that got introduced to us through the shop once again, and that we kind of at the beginning, when they were streaming from homes, and then we got lucky, and with a friend who runs quite a few here in Munich, we had the chance to help them find a permanent place, and since then it grew to be like the spot for exchange for people who are into music here in the city, and their studio is always like a meeting point, and you always find new DJs or new music interested people, and so yeah, that's like, I think that's a big change, because it wasn't there before. There was radio stations, but they were mainly run by the city, or just like funded by the state, and this is like entirely independent. They do whatever they want to do, and it's been really refreshing, and they have a really nice program, so it's nice to listen to it.
It was a time when we didn't know, it was not sure how the shop is able to continue, because the landlord was, we had a 5-year contract, and it wasn't clear how expensive it's going to be for the next episode. So we thought of the radio also as a physical space again, like an extension of the record shop, basically. Mm-hmm. But then we were lucky to renew our contract at the shop on a
decent basis.
Yeah.
And yeah, and they have been doing a great job since then.
Yeah, I was checking out the SoundCloud for Radio 80K and it looks really good. It reminds me of lots of other local online radio stations in various cities around the world, which I think they do something to kind of define what that local community is, and they give a little space for people who maybe don't really have much experience at all but have great taste in music. And yeah, lots of cities have their own equivalent. It seems to be a really important factor in the health of the local scene now.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a curious page on your website called Wow, World of Wisdom. And there is a box where anyone can leave a message, but there's not really any instruction about either what the message should be.
Have you left
or what you're doing? No, I haven't yet. Because I didn't. I will, but there's no instruction about either what kind of message you want or, of course, what you're doing with all of the messages. What are you doing with all of these messages?
There's instruction about that. If you read the AGBs, then you will find, it says that we want to do a publication with those messages. That's like an idea that evolved in the first couple of weeks of Corona, where we kind of questioned a lot of the activities we were doing, or like we kind of needed a new outlet and a new way of communicating. And the plan is that we collect all these messages, we archive them, and then we make a publication out of them. And hopefully that publication is going to sell some copies, and then we can use that money to donate it for good causes or to do something nice with it. The reason why we don't give any instructions what kind of message we want to receive is that we kind of don't want people to be
limited
at all with like what they send us. And also we will not, we won't credit like the people who send us the messages.
Okay.
Not because we don't think credit should be there where it's due, but because again, I think
perception is different.
The perception is very differently if you don't attach it to a person. So we just want to have like a very plain white paper with thoughts and ideas from hopefully like all across the world. And we were very skeptical at the beginning whether this is actually going to work or whether we will actually receive messages, because obviously there's like no real catch for doing it. But it's been very interesting. And it's like all over the place. Like it's from like just small aphorisms to like really long texts about very private stuff people send us. And it's like it's very diverse and interesting project.
Were you saying that the reason that you came up with it was as a kind of response to coronavirus in a sense, or a response to this strange pause that has been put on everything? Or was it an idea that you'd had before that?
No, it was not an idea we had before. It was maybe it was also a response to the time one had suddenly, like because now we are almost back to our daily routines. You don't get a lot of time, or not enough time sometimes, to think about things in general. You just do your tasks and try to cope. And yeah, especially at the beginning of coronavirus, everyone was in home office, and we had just time to evaluate some wishes for what we want to do with public possession, and this is only one of many things that kind of came out of that, and some things we haven't even started yet, and. Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a response to the coronavirus, but I don't think it's necessarily attached to it. I think we want to do it as long as possible. And the website states also that once we have gathered enough messages to receive more messages and to maybe do a second issue. I mean, this is very hypothetical now, but ideally it's going to work out that way.
Right. I mean, it's interesting that amid the obvious devastation of coronavirus, for most people, it's had this very strange effect where we're on a kind of pause or a slowdown, and it has opened up a lot of space in our lives for reflection on what we're doing. And I think especially in the music industry, and especially with dance music and everything to do with events, and none of that can happen. And it does seem to open up a lot of space for thinking about what it's all for and what we're doing with our time. Can you tell me anything about thoughts that you might have had about this topic recently, or any particular feelings that you have about what you would like the kind of music industry or even this particular kind of underground music community to be like or to strive for after coronavirus? If there is an after, there might not be an after, but, you know, in the future.
I mean, we hope there is an after, and yeah. It's very difficult to talk as a placeholder for an industry or for other people in general.
Sure.
I can only say what I think we kind of feel has, or we can only like share some thoughts about what we talk here about public possession. And it was not only like since coronavirus that it's actually it's been going on for a while, because obviously we noticed that the brand is growing, even though it's, as you mentioned at the beginning, it's still small in comparison to a lot of other labels, and but we kind of see a responsibility in working with the privilege we have and to be able to do this, and obviously also in being a creator of things, like being a producer. Like, you always have to consider, like, can we do less, or what should we do? You know, like, does it all make sense? But then in the end, it's we feel like the output we have is still reasonable, and if we kind of try and, for example, like when we talk about making donations, it's like a way of redirecting resources we have and we are privileged to have to people who don't have them. And I think maybe that's like a nice thing that happens at the moment in general, is that a lot of people think about how they should interact and how they should make decisions based on us being part of a whole and being responsible for a community. And ideally, I'd say a lot of good things are coming out of movements that have evolved lately, like Black Lives Matter or the climate change situation. And I think we definitely want to be part of it. And it's always like, it's not like we are not nowhere near where we maybe want to be or where we can be, but it's a constant process, and we discuss what we can do. And I think a lot of other people do the same. So I feel like maybe it's a good turning point for a few things that have gone wrong for a long time. Hopefully. Like, I can't see in the future. We just try to constantly remind us of these things.
Right. And I think with music especially, and dance music especially, although it can be a very spiky territory to kind of go into a lot of these issues of privilege, and especially with Black Lives Matter movement and the way that that's kind of ricocheting through the music industry, I think in many ways, music and dance music is really well placed to have that conversation, because the issues are so particular to music. You know, it's such a different type of way of engaging with history, privilege, racism, that I almost feel as though as a kind of community, we can actually do a lot more than a lot of other sectors might be able to do, because the level of conversation, I think, is quite different. And I think with climate issues, that might also be true as well. Is that something that you have kind of thought about in particular over recent years, the kind of climate crisis issue and how to be a green label in any way?
Yes, certainly. As I said, like, everyone produces, so like everyone on this planet is like somebody is producing waste in the end, if you want to call it like that. And there is like this idea of leaving no trace is I think undoable. If we want to continue to do what we do, we will certainly be keep being producers of goods. I think it's more the approach of how you produce them than maybe just trying not to do them. So we always try to be thoughtful about the issue of, is it necessary to do that now, and how much of it has to be done. And it's also like a medium for something we really believe in. So I think it has a right to exist. It's a very difficult issue. It's hard to generalize now, or even to kind of make our personal or our brand's position clear, other than that we always try to be thoughtful when interacting with nature or other people. And I think if that's like your premise for doing things, then you are on the right way. And I think a lot of the times you have to remind yourself about this premise. And again, talking about privilege and how nice it is to be in a city like Munich and to be able to do what we want to do. And these things, one shouldn't feel guilty about them, but one has to be kind of aware of the fact that there is a lot of other people who don't have the same foundation as we have. And I think also during the time of coronavirus, that became very evident socially, economically, that the people who had problems before, their problems grew bigger. And the people who didn't, they took it as a timeout, you know. So, I mean, we are in a process of thought. So I don't have answers. Maybe we never will have, but we try to do the stuff we do accordingly and consider our impact on everyone and everything we interact with constantly.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thank you for being on Relevant Parties.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Relevant Parties from Carhartt Work in Progress. If you want to dive into more music from the labels in this series, check out the Relevant Parties playlist on Spotify. You can find the link in the show notes. And remember, you can subscribe to Relevant Parties so that you never miss an episode. It's available wherever good podcasts are found. And if you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and a comment on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to know what you think. So thanks for listening, and join me next time for more stories behind the world's best record labels.